So today's subject is live as Brahman, or live as God. So, you know, it sounds very presumptuous that how can I live as God? You know, what is the idea of having a topic like that? Seems very impractical. So, how can I live as God, or how can I be God? I'm such an ordinary, you know, helpless little mortal, and God is all powerful. He's everywhere. He's everything. He created the whole universe, and all I can create is a mess or confusion. That's all I'm capable of. And how can he and I be one? And the scriptures tell us, Jesus knew that. He said, the Father in heaven and I are one. He knew it, he experienced it, and he lived it. And we say, oh, he was the Son of God, you know. But we are all children of God as much as Jesus was. He had that same divine power that we all have. It's not that God is favorites, that he distributes some to some and then does not. All animals, all birds, all plants, all humans, and even all inert objects have that same infinite consciousness. It is that he knew it and we don't know it. That is the only difference. He experienced it, he realized it, and we don't. All the great saints and prophets tell us repeatedly that you are divine, you have that divinity in you, you have that potential, you have that power. Just live it, experience it, realize it, and become it. You all are, and including, I mean, when I say you, we all are, but we unfortunately do not have the knowledge. Or even if we have the knowledge, we feel that it is only the saints are capable of it. I am such a sinner, you know. If out of all the sinners, you know, if there was a category, my name would be number one. And how can I be, you know, become, even if I go in front of God, I feel ashamed. So we have all these, you know, wrong understandings. So I read recently a very beautiful article. It said, how can we live as God? How can we live as Brahman? Because ultimately, if it is not practical, if it is not going to be useful in my life, then it is no use. Then why should I study the Bible or the Quran or the Gita or the Guru Granth Sahib? So they say that Brahman or God, Brahman is the name given to God that is not a particular form. It's not like a form like the Mother Goddess or like Jesus or Krishna or Shiva or Buddha, but it is the formless, all-pervading consciousness. Because we say God is everywhere. When he is everywhere, there is no place where he is not. He is there in this room, he is there in the space between you and me, he is there within me, in every cell of my being. Every cell of my being is growing, multiplying, functioning because of his presence. He is there in all the rocks and stones and mud and dirt and everything, he is there. So that is Brahman, that is that all-pervading, who is beyond all shapes, beyond all forms, beyond all descriptions, not confined. The moment you confine him that he is this form only, you know, he can only be as Krishna or only be as Guru Nanak or only be as Jesus, then you are limiting him. You are saying that that is only the only form. And then you are saying, well, my God is so limited that he can only be in this particular form or only in this particular building. But he's unlimited, he's everywhere. So that is Brahman. And in our scriptures, this Brahman, of course, it is impossible to describe him, but has been given three major qualities. One is Sat. Sat means permanent existence. That which never perishes, never dies. So Sat. Chit means knowledge or consciousness, means he is all-knowing. As we know, my thoughts, even before I'm going to say these words, they become thought in my mind, that there's a thought coming that I'm going to say. But he knows the thought even before it becomes a thought. So he knows what I'm going to say even before I say it. So he is all-knowing, he is all-consciousness, he is there. So that is the second quality. And the third quality of the Lord is Anand or bliss. So that's why we say Satchidanand. Sat, Chit, Anand. It's combined as Satchidanand. And those are the three principal qualities of the Lord. Okay, God is all that. But I am neither permanent. I am not permanent existence. I don't know much. I know little. I may know English, but I don't know German. I don't know Russian. I know medicine. I don't know computers. There's so much I don't know. So how can I be consciousness? The Lord knows everything. He knows all languages. He knows all sciences. And obviously, definitely, I'm not bliss. I'm suffering, and there are so many problems in my life, and I am so unhappy, and my husband, and my wife, and my job, and my boss, and my son, and my teenage daughter, all of them are giving me problems. Definitely, I'm not bliss. But how can I live as all these? How can I live as Sat and Chit and Anand? So we have a few practical steps. So they say to live as Sat or existence, you have to become fearless. What is our fear? Of course, the first fear is the fear of death. That's the greatest fear. I might die. But once I understand that I am that immortal consciousness, and each and every one of us is a manifestation of the divine, just as there is mud. Now there are thousands of parts created out of mud. Now mud was there before the parts were created. Out of mud we created parts. And then after the parts break, they go back into mud. Now mud became part and then part became mud. But did anything happen to the mud? No. The part was created, the mud was same. The part broke, the mud remained mud. So similarly, they say God alone was. The Bible says, you know, God was there alone. And then he created the world in 6 days. And the seventh day he rested. So when God created us, there was nothing else but he alone. So he created us out of himself. So he himself became this whole universe. So this whole universe is nothing but God's presence alone. Just as all parts in the world are nothing but mud. All waves are nothing but the ocean. All ornaments are nothing but the gold. So similarly, all beings and all things are nothing but that one divinity. So when I am divine, when I am that God, then I am permanent. That's what we say, that the life principle, the consciousness, in you is permanent, and you are that permanent consciousness. You are deathless. Your body may die, of course. The body, everybody's body will deteriorate and die. The mind will be, you know, happy, unhappy. The intellect will be successful, unsuccessful. But if you identify yourself and say that I am that consciousness who at this moment is taking on the role, I'm playing the role of Anil or Stafford or Carmen or whatever part I am playing at this moment is a role that has been given to me by that divine director up there. And that role I play to the best of my ability, do the best, but death cannot come to me because nobody can destroy me because I am deathless. And the moment you understand that, then death holds no fear for these people. That's why Jesus was totally unafraid. He knew that they were going to crucify him, and he smilingly went to them. We hear of so many great saints in India, you know, some of the Sikh gurus who were tortured and killed by the Muslims, but they cheerfully accepted death. Why? Because they realize I am deathless. These swords cannot kill me. These knives and these guns cannot kill me. So they say become fearless. Fearless of death. Because death is, we think of death as, oh, this final, horrible. But if death is only a clothes I have put on, this body is a pair of clothes, and pair of clothes become old, I have no problem dropping them and putting on a new pair. So this body, when it's time to drop it, it doesn't necessarily have to be old. It could be after 30 years or 50 years or 80 years. I cheerfully drop it because I am deathless. I am that permanent consciousness. So they say become fearless. But then the fear of death, we say, it's okay, I'm not afraid of death, but I'm afraid of losing a loved one. You know, I love somebody and that person dies, and then I become so depressed, or I lose my job. You know, nowadays we find people, unfortunately, have lost their jobs, or lose my pet, you know, or my pet rock gets stolen. You know, we get attached to so many things. And then I say, oh my God, or I lose my self-respect, or somebody insulted me, or somebody's afraid of public speaking. You know, that's again one of the fears. Oh, why am I afraid? Because people will, what will they think about me? They'll laugh at me. So we are faced with countless small and big fears in our lives. You know, I'm afraid of this, I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid that the person may not smile at me, the person may not say good morning to me. You know, then I get so... So they say that, how do you overcome these fears? By practicing courage. Practicing courage. Remember that in constantly in life, we are faced with challenges, with problems. And it's only with courage that we can overcome them. And there are small acts of heroism that we can carry out every day. It's cold and you are in your warm blanket, but you say, no, I have to get up at 5:30 to meditate. It takes courage to get out and meditate. Or, you know, have this particular person I love, or this particular habit. You know, I have the habit, I have to have tea. I'm so dependent on it. So it takes courage to break a habit or give up an attachment. I'm so attached to these things. Or it takes courage. I have this hard-earned money that I earned with great difficulty. Should I spend it on myself and have some fun with it? Or maybe I can use this money to help somebody else, to make this world a better place. So there are constant battles that we have to fight in our life, and it takes courage to fight those battles. And for those kind of battles, you don't get a Purple Heart or a Medal of Honor or a Paramveer Chakra. You don't. Nobody recognizes them. But it is in practicing courage and in winning life's battles as they come to us that we can overcome and we can get better. So one way to practice fearlessness is to courageously meet life's challenges, meet life's problems, and challenges come to everybody. And opportunities are there, challenges are there, difficulties are there. But if you can overcome bad habits, if you can give up excessive attachments, and conquer your fears and courageously practice, then you have practiced a little bit of sat. You have become deathless. You have become fearless. Talking about death reminds me of this little story. There were these three men, an American, a Jew, and a Canadian, who were crossing the road in a crosswalk. It was a green walk signal. But this drunk driver came from the other side and ran a red light and knocked them down and killed all three of them. So the three of them were killed, and went to St. Peter, and they were knocking at the gates to be let in. And St. Peter looks at their books and says, you know, sorry, you have come here too prematurely. One of you was supposed to not come for 10 years, another one for 20 years, another one for 25 years. You have come here too soon. So all three of you can go back. So they were happy. Oh, thank God, we can go back. He said, but there is one little problem. You know, like everything else, we have a shipping and a handling charge. Like when you get a parcel, so it's a shipping and handling. He says, how much? He says, $100. You pay $100 and you can go back. So the American, no problem, he took out his wallet, gave a $100 bill, he was sent back. And so he landed back on Earth, and his friend said, oh, we thought you died. He said, no, you know, I went there and it was a mistake. I'm not supposed to die for many years. And so St. Peter asked me to pay $100 and I did. He said, oh, that's good, but what happened to the Jew? He said, well, last I left, he was still haggling about the price. And they said, well, what happened to the Canadian? He said, oh, he's waiting for his government to pay the bill. So death is such a fear we all have, but practice courage. The second is chit. or existence or consciousness. And we are told that all of you are that consciousness. You are not this body, you are not this mind, and you are not this intellect. But we are constantly dependent. I am dependent on my physical comforts. I am dependent on my emotional attachments. And I am dependent on my intellectual fanaticism, you know, liberal or Republican or Democrat or, you know, all those are Hindu or Muslim. We are so dependent on these fanatic ideas, or it could be anything. It could be science versus religion, or, I mean, and we are so constantly dependent. So how do we practice non-dependence? And we say there is two kind of dependence. One is a material dependence. You know, I'm dependent on TV. I have to watch my TV every morning or at night. You know, I have to watch my favorite soaps, or I have to watch my favorite, you know, movie or my CNN or whatever. Or I'm dependent on tea or coffee or cigarettes or alcohol, you know, or internet. Nowadays, people are addicted to internet. Every half an hour, they turn on and check the internet. I mean, you know, constantly they're on the computer and just surfing the net and just, yeah, I mean, you need to answer your emails, you need to, you know, have the knowledge, but just to constantly, just uselessly surf the net. And so, or I have to read, that's my problem. I have to read the morning newspaper. Without that, I can't have my breakfast. And that is all dependence, you know, that without the morning newspaper, my day doesn't start. So they say practice non-dependence, but more important than physical dependence is mental dependence. We depend so much on other people's praise, you know, I must be praised, and that's more difficult. You know, physical dependence, you can say, okay, I'm not going to turn on the TV, or I'm not going to turn on the computer, or I'm going to cancel my newspaper subscription. But emotional dependence, that to depend on other people for their love, for their praise, other people, you know, my parents, you know, sometimes people are so dependent on their parents that if they are happy with me, they should be satisfied and they should praise me. Not that one shouldn't care for one's parents or love them. That is part of my duty to take care of my parents. But we become so dependent on other people's acceptance and praise and love. And if somebody criticizes us, we get so destroyed and so overwhelmed. So that is mental dependence. And that is actually more difficult. Or somebody loved me and then doesn't love me anymore. And I am destroyed and all. And I take an overdose of sleeping pills and jump off the river, you know. That is mental dependence. So they say practice being without. Like I said, I'm going to, you know, shut off my TV for a week, or my internet, or my newspaper, or maybe a loved one whom I, if the person doesn't call me 5 times a day, I get depressed. Maybe you decide, okay, for a week I'm not going to talk to that person, and I'm going to see if I can live without that person or that thing. And initially it may be very hard. You maybe go through withdrawal, and you maybe go through anxiety, and you go through nervousness, and you go through stress. Or you might say, you know, it's not that bad, I'm okay, my life is fine. You know, even if I don't read about the world is still going on, it didn't stop. And I'm okay too. So I think the understanding that I am okay does not mean that you give up everything you like and, you know, give up people you love and become a monk and wander in the Himalayas. But the idea that if I have this object in my life, I am fine. And if I don't have this object in my life, I am still fine. When that understanding comes, then they say you live as that chit, as that consciousness. That my life is good, whether I have this object or person or not. And when that independence comes, that is called living as God, living as Brahman. It does not mean that you become cold and indifferent and you don't love anybody and you don't care. You become like a rock. No, in fact, a person who is truly spiritual becomes more loving and more compassionate and more sharing and becomes a much better person. But he or she does not depend for his happiness, as Swami Chinmayananda always said, he said, do not put the key of your happiness in somebody else's pocket. Or in the modern phrase, do not put the remote control of your happiness in somebody else's pocket so he or she can turn it on or off. But as you substitute your dependence on material things, you'll find your mind is empty. And what do? Replace it with the higher. Now I'm spending all my time thinking about the world and people, I start thinking about the Lord. Spend time chanting his name, meditating on him, praying, reading good books, or just thinking about him, just taking a walk in nature. And then as I'm walking, I just see the sunrise and the sunset and the flowers, and in the park I see the birds chirping and the bushes and the trees and just remember the Lord. See him in all the people that are walking, all the cars are running because of the Lord in them. And so as I spend my time thinking about him, my mind becomes more divine. The more you think about something or somebody, the more you become like him. Go to good lectures. You know, if you have heard there's a good speaker coming, go and listen to him. Buy good books and read them. So as you fill your mind with the higher, it slowly gets filled with him, filled with that positive. So you remove the negative, remove your dependence, and replace with higher. And as you do that, you will find that you become Ananda. You become bliss. Because if I do not depend on people or things for my happiness, then I am happiness itself. And that is my true nature. In reality, we are all permanently happy. And how do I practice this happiness? By becoming desireless, by becoming contented. When I'm happy as I am, then I do not need an object of the world to make me happy. And then such a person's desires become less. The person does not need to go shopping every week and buy new and different clothes, does not need to change his wife every 2-3 years, or change his job, or change his house. So such a person gets contentment. People will say, desirelessness and contentment means then this person will never progress. And we don't say that. We say, do your best. Work hard as you can. You want to be the number one. Be the best teacher in the world. Be the best professor. Be the best mother. Be the best doctor. Be the best student. Be the best, you know, be the best at what you want to be. Work your hardest. Do your best. But at the end of the day, remember that what I have is what I deserve. So be contented with what you have, accept it as the Lord's grace, and then next day you still go out and work. And suppose you fail, you say, okay, it was meant to be. Maybe my effort was not good enough, or maybe the situation was not conducive for my success. I'm still fine. Even if I fail, tomorrow I get up and put that same effort, or put twice the amount of effort. So put as much effort as you have to, but at the end of the day, when you go to bed, have this desire, oh Lord, I am thankful to you for what you have given me. I am contented. I don't desire anymore. And with that attitude, when you end the day, when you end the week, the month, the year, then your life is peaceful. Then you have a lot of inner peace. But then we have also written here, practice discontentment. We said, you just now told us be content, and then you are saying be discontent. Make up your mind. So we say, when we say practice discontentment, we say be contented with material objects, but be discontented with your spiritual progress. Spiritually, I have to get better. I have to evolve. I have to become like God. I have to become like Jesus or Buddha or Guru Nanak or Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda. So I will not rest till I reach him. I will be the best spiritual aspirant I can be. Do not be contented with your service. You know, I have done enough service. No, there is so much of the world to be served. Let me go out and serve the world. Do not be contented with your service. Do not be contented with your knowledge. People say, I have read enough. I don't need to read anymore. No. Keep on reading, keep on learning. You know, people say, I don't need to go to lectures. You know, it's okay. What new can they teach me? I have already. Every new teacher that comes, that every saint that you meet, you can always learn new things from such people. And so when you have the opportunity to listen to saints, to meet with them, what we call satsang, take advantage of that. So be discontented with your spiritual progress. Yesterday I meditated for a half an hour. Today I'm going to meditate for 45 minutes. Tomorrow for an hour. Today I chanted the beads. You know, I did 108 times one mala. Tomorrow I'm going to do two rosaries. The day after, three rosaries. So the idea is that I am contented with the world, but I am discontented with my spirit. Discontentment does not mean that I should keep changing my path. You know, one day I practice Buddhism, and then second day I go to Judaism, and then third day Vedanta, and keep changing my gurus. No, we don't mean that. What we mean is that do not be satisfied till you have reached that goal, till you have become one with him. So until then, you keep on working. And we find that once you have, as you progress spiritually, your restlessness will go down. Your agitation will go down because he is all peace, all compassion, all kindness. And we find in the lives of these saints, they are so peaceful, so calm. And when you sit with them, it is like you are sitting with the Lord himself. And I have, you know, been blessed and had the opportunity to sit with a lot of very saintly people, not only of the Chinmaya Mission, but of various different faiths, including Eckhart Tolle. I have had an opportunity to be very close and listen to him. So when you are in the company of these saints, you get a tremendous peace. And that is what we have to acquire through practicing fearlessness, through practicing non-dependence, and through practicing contentment. Calmness and quietude. And as you practice this, you become quiet, you become peaceful. And then you realize all the three qualities that the Lord has and that I also have. Each and every one of us has all these qualities. We do not know it because of ignorance, because of lack of understanding. So as you practice these values and bring them in your life, you will become closer to him, and that is what we call as living as Brahman or living as God. And such people are called Godmen. That's why in our Hindu tradition, any great saint, we call him Bhagwan. We call him the Lord, like Raman Maharishi. He's not referred to as Raman Maharishi, he's referred to as Bhagwan Raman Maharishi, means the Lord himself. That's why even Jesus is worshipped as God, because they say God appeared on earth as Jesus or as Buddha or as Guru Nanak. So that is the purpose, and we all can live as God, live as Brahman on this earth. It's a very, very nice subject.